Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. We've had a bunch of technical issues just getting this off the ground. It's so annoying, Bob. I finally get a new computer. Oh, get a new computer. Your other one's 12 years old. And then everything goes to shit.
I don't know why new tech has to be that way. And I'm always envious of people who can just open up the box, start the damn thing, and like on day one, they're rolling.
They're wizards.
When I joined Apple, there was all kinds of what they call onboarding to do. And I just thought to myself, like, they're like, okay, and here's a few easy steps. And I thought, no fucking way. No way are these going to be just some easy steps. And of course, 4 days later, I'm still not officially signed up.
Oh, no. And onboarding. What a douchey term.
So you and I know it is douchey. You and I are on camera now for the first time. We actually haven't seen each other doing a pod, but your new computer, I guess, allows for this. So I'm watching you as you're going through all the settings on your computer, and you're kind of narrating what you're doing, but with that old guy mumble.
Yeah.
I just see a drop down menu here. And there's nothing that does not install confidence in a person quite as much as listening to them talk themselves through what they're doing.
Yeah, you're right. You want to prove to the world, it's like, listen, I'm doing the steps, I'm doing the right things, and I'm recording it for the world to hear. And yet it's like, we're still not 100% there. Like, I don't know why I can't plug in my headphones so I can just hear you through headphones. Like, I'm still not there yet. Onboarding. Get the fuck out of here with that term.
All right. So let me just get the topics here and get going.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah. Thank you. It was a very small callback. It was only a few moments, but
yeah.
Callback nonetheless.
Nonetheless.
I didn't talk to you last week because it's just been such a crazy time, and I fell on ice and whacked my head. That sucked. And I think there's few things that make you feel quite as vulnerable in winter as falling on ice.
Oh, yeah.
And I got one of those good old-fashioned goose eggs on my head, you know, where it's like a half a clementine. And it's weird because it didn't really even hurt, but holy shit, did it look bad. Remember Hasim Rahman when he was fighting and he had that big bump
yes.
on his head?
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. But it was scarier than it looked, which is actually the best thing when you're sick because everyone wants to take care of you, but you're actually not in that much distress.
By the way, where did this happen? Like, give me a little bit of the rundown.
So it was one of those cruel, ironic jokes that life plays on you. I'd been just sleeping so terribly for weeks. And I thought, well, I'm not going to sit in the dark forever. I'm just going to take the dog out. So a couple mornings in a row, still dark out. It's like 6 a.m. And I thought, okay, well, I've had a coffee. I'm up. I'm dressed. I'll take the dog out. And I'll be proactive. So I get to this High Park, which is like, you know, only about a 5-minute walk from my house, 10 minutes. And it's pitch black out. And the hill that I'm going down is a sheet of ice, but I can't really tell because it's still so dark. So I get halfway down and I just do one of those old fashioned Looney Tunes wipeouts where your feet are way up in the air.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and it was the worst, Matt, because I'm lying there and I'm thinking, okay, am I concussed? And I'm phoning home and my wife's not picking up. And I'm like, she's just sleeping. And I phoned no bullshit like 20 times in a row. Finally, she picked it up. I'm like, how did you not pick this up? And I felt so bad about being angry, but I'm in the dark. My head is swelling. I can't tell if I'm concussed. I have the dog, and the dog decided to run into a cluster of trees and get tangled. So I had to climb an icy hill to de-untangle her.
What a horrible morning.
Oh, it really just sucked. And I just said, look, you got to pick me up.
Yeah.
And I just took a couple of days for myself and I thought, I'm not doing nothing, but it's fine. Everything was fine. I mean, thankfully it was weird. It was one of those instances where you go, this kind of sucks, but God, this could have been way worse.
Oh yeah. Right? Look at, it's a horrible thing. And I don't want to give up examples because then I'll just make this morose, but I'm glad you're doing well. And the ice it is the worst. And then the other part is that, immediately you care less about your own physical well-being and you just hope no one saw you.
This is, you know what, you know, you're actually hurt when you hope someone did.
Mm. Oh shit, that's a higher level.
Right. I was actually lying on the ground thinking, God, I hope someone saw that in case I need help.
Wow. Yeah. So it's
because I moved way past embarrassment.
Yeah. So it goes from vanity to safety.
Exactly. From fender bender to you know, full on body repair.
Yeah. Go get the ambulance.
I got a bunch of things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk about baseball, but I kind of don't want to start there.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to start there. I don't know why we should.
I have a different take on it all.
Do you want to start there? Because it is, like, in a lot of ways, it's the biggest story going. I mean, Jesus, Matt, they canceled opening day. For history buffs like you, that's a travesty.
It is. It sucks. But I'll go in a different direction, because the obvious thing is to be angry at the owners. And everyone should be. The owners are not exactly being stewards of the game. You can be angry at the players, but there's far less of that. The easiest target is obviously Rob Manfred, who is not designed to speak in front of a microphone. That guy is awkward, and he should never be around a mic. Those conversations, they're kind of predictable. For me, the more interesting thing is, how much is this lockout? How much do you blame smart baseball people who, from the Moneyball era, and the last 20 years have told you, oh, no, you can win without spending as much money. So then teams start spending less. And then teams watch Houston and Chicago and how they cleverly built up teams, but they lost a lot. And if you're trying to tank, there's no incentive to pay for players. How much of the acrimony by the players, which is 100% legitimate, is not because owners are just trying to squeeze every dollar, but because they're smart people in charge and they tell you, if you want to win, don't spend for 5 years.
How low did Houston get its payroll during peak tank? I think they were under $50 million.
Well, we call that there's the Mendoza line.
The Mendoza line, yeah.
This is the Tampa Bay Rays line. Are you above or below a Tampa payroll, which is always at the bottom, but that team's often at the top. So
the Mendoza line, but then in salary terms, it's the Tropicana line.
Yes, exactly. Ooh, that's way better than Tampa Bay Rays line. Yeah, the Tropicana line.
It's, in some ways, it's like, in a lot of ways in life, your blessings are your curses and vice versa. In that Tampa Bay is able to compete as a small market. And they've done an amazing job, but they've done it in a kind of a not so fun way. It's a bit, I think your take's an interesting one. I guess what it does is it creates parity, or it allows for parity. It does cause a question about tanking, that's for sure.
Well, tanking means not spending money. If teams aren't constantly spending money, then salaries aren't going up. Like, salaries are 6.7% lower than what they were in 2017, but franchise values keep going up. So I totally get why the Players Union, why Tony Clark and all of them are pissed off. But the point for me is to take the conversation beyond just yelling at Manfred and owners. We can do it. We know the beats. It's boring. I'm more interested in the unintended consequences of teams like the Astros winning, teams like the Cubs winning. How much did that lead to no one signing free agents?
You know, Matt, it goes to a really challenging assumption we have about sports, which is that we all have the same intention, and that's to win. When you talk about a team being competitive, there's really two ways to look at it, because there's two playing fields. One of them is the actual playing field, and the other one is the bank. If you own a team and you can keep your payroll really down, but still draw pretty well at home and, you know, pull in a 500 team that's interesting and has decent TV ratings, that's really competitive. If you're a business owner and you think, if I can keep my costs down and still really have a nice margin of return on my investment, I'm pretty happy. If you tell me that I could spend more and I may or may not see that reflect my return on investment, why would I do that?
And the counter to that is, if you are winning and if you win a World Series, there'll probably be a massive revenue bump in season tickets and things like that. Again, this comes down to, we need less smart people. You know, put me in charge of all the teams. I'm like, yeah, let's go get that guy. And then I'll look at like Carl Pohlad, you know, the owner of the Twins. I'm like, dude, you got billions of dollars. You're like 90. Let's start spending. We need fewer smart people.
I think it's such a great point. And I think here's a headline for what are the inevitable rants you're going to have to do again and again and again until this is resolved. Something that you've known and I've known since we were little children. Math ruins everything.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. Like expected goals rate and, you know, and FOP and FIP and blee blap. Okay, I've just aged myself 30 years with that last line. But no, math ruins sports. I don't want to know what salary cap or escrow or luxury tax thresholds. I want dingers.
And remember when Brian Burke, you know, who was a disciple of Pat Quinn, said, I want to build a winner, but I owe the fans an entertaining team as well.
Yes.
And, you know, the smart fan listens to that and goes, winning is entertaining. I don't care if I win 2-1 boring games over and over again. I'm entertained by winning. But that's not really always true, is it? Because you can love a team that's 500 and plays an exciting style of hockey or baseball or whatever because of the dynamics of the game. I mean, it's just much more fun to watch. In the end, of course, winning is the most important thing. But it goes back to that idea of how entertaining our sports actually supposed to be. Is it okay to have a boring team that wins all the time? I don't want to cheer for that. Did you ever want to rally around the New Jersey Devils? Because, God, they were great, but they sucked.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that goes into the existential conversation about can you enjoy a Leafs game when you know the inevitability of the playoffs? Okay, so my greedy take on that, Bob, is I want 8-4 in the regular season, but I'm fine with 2-1 wins in the postseason.
You know, Matt, I thought you brought up a really key thing, Mike, about math, and it was the shift. I mean, as a baseball fan who loves defense, and, you know, I was a glove first, bat second kind of player when I played. And, you know, I just remember like Ozzie Smith making diving, up the middle, like the Wizard of Oz, like just the idea that like outstanding defense was an important part of the game. And they kind of nullified that by the shift. Like you shouldn't have to play great defense. You know, you should be positioned in a place where the ball comes to you.
Yeah.
Which is effective and so effing boring. It's like goaltending. You know, we grew up watching Dominic Hasek like thrill us with his incredible, like, you know, improvisational genius. And now it's just be big and square up. It works.
Yeah.
But do you want to watch it?
No, absolutely not. I'm fine within the postseason. I'll derive enough entertainment of a win, but not in a regular season. And I mean, with baseball, we're not going to do the we need to fix baseball conversation because right now there is no baseball, but it stinks. The thing is, we know how this is going to play out. They're going to yell and scream. The fans are going to yell and scream. Everyone's going to take sides. Baseball eventually will be back sometime, you know, in May, and because they know they can't lose an entire year. And eventually we'll move on when Shohei Ohtani goes 8 innings and hits 2 home runs.
Every fight comes down to how much are you willing to lose? That's all it comes down to is it's how much are you willing to lose?
Yeah.
When you go to the casino, the reason why guys who have big stakes do well is, you know, I mean, obviously probably are good, but beyond that, you can afford to lose for a bit. You can afford to go down until it comes back your way. When I think about the players, they always lose these things because they just have more to lose.
It's true. Yeah, you to win at like a blackjack, you need patience and a bankroll. And the owners have larger bankrolls than the players.
The owners of the house.
Yeah.
The house always wins because the house can endure some losses. And the numbers are slightly ticked towards them. And so they're playing the long game. It's like, you may beat me today, you may beat me tomorrow, but over the course of 365 days, I'm going to win more because I'm the house. Mm-hmm. And cheering for the owners is like cheering for the dealer at the blackjack table. There's just something fundamentally wrong about it.
Oh, God, yeah. No one roots for the owners. One of my little pet peeves, and it's going to happen if it hasn't already, there will be the long think piece about why are fans cheering against the worker? Why do they root for the owner? And I always hate that because fans don't root for the owner. Fans get angrier at players because we know who the players are. We know their faces. I can't name you all the owners. In the end, fans are pro fan. And, you know, so when they're upset that their sports happy has been taken away, what's the easier one? Like, what's the one in front of you more? It's the player. So you get angry at the player. It's not about being pro-owner. It's about being pro your own self-interest.
I think that's true, although I'm inclined to say in North America, for whatever reason, we tend to favor the bosses when push comes to shove. I think we like to talk about how much we favor the workers because it sounds better on Twitter. But when push really comes to shove, but I feel like we're like, well, let's make sure the bosses are. I think everyone, you know, not everyone, but I think there's more people in our culture believe in trickle down everything than I think they're willing to admit.
And you know what that is, though? That again isn't pro owner. It's pro stability. When the owners are winning, then you have long labor peace. You have, you know, only so much player movement. So owners winning equals stability, which equals it's better for my sports happy. It's not better for the player, but as a fan, my first priority is, are the games on? If they're on, fantastic. So again, it's not, oh, I'm rooting for this hedge fund manager who made $3 billion, starting some tech startup companies. So that's what it's about.
Okay, but I'm going to push back a bit, although I think everything you're saying is true. But
yeah,
I love that. I love that word stability. I love that word because that is the key of so many discussions that we have is how stable are we supposed to keep things? And the answer over the last 10, 15 years has been totally and utterly stable. Even in a world filled with risk, even where there is volatility, smart thinking in quotation marks is how do we remove all volatility from all situations? And I think people have been convinced that if the owners are happy, things are stable. Now, yeah. It doesn't matter what happens underneath the owners. Of course, that's not true. We've seen how that's been incredibly destabilizing. But we're just convinced that as long as the bosses are still in business and we still have jobs to go to, everything is stable. It doesn't matter if I'm getting ripped off because it's stable.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like in like obviously – I'm kind of getting into a macro discussion of, you know, where do we put our interests? But in a weird sort of way, Matt, that is conservatism, right? Like conservatism going back to its roots is, I believe the institutions work and we should have slow incremental change that helps them get to a better place, but we should always double down on the institution itself. Whereas the more progressive spirit is like, these things are basically broken and maybe we should try some new things. Which to a conservative sounds like total fucking chaos because it could be, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like the owners in this, when it really comes down to it about the sports happy is like, you know, they can fix the situation by saying yes. So let's just make them happy.
So, and
wow, yeah. How'd you like my political discourse there?
I loved it. And, you know, we could have, certainly delved. I mean, God, we could have got 100 places with that. But my thing in the end is Manfred is a clueless meat shield. The owners are horrible stewards for the game. So obviously, the players deserve more. I'll always push back that fans are pro-owner. Fans are pro-self-interest, which means they're going to be angrier at the players because, like, come on, just get a deal done. Let's go. You're still going to make millions to have to hit a double. It's not fair, but it's not like fans have got a fat head of an owner on their wall.
No, but the second point is the important one, which is the relatability factor. It's like, I played sports and I don't like my job and I wish I could get paid millions of dollars.
Ding, ding, ding. Yep, absolutely.
You know, and we don't sit to ourselves and say, well, those guys are actually being locked out right now. Like, they do want to play, but they're being told you can't play if you ask for more than this. So it's not really their ball to take home. It's the owner's ball to take home and they're doing it.
Yeah,
so it's a misrecognition of the situation.
Yeah,
but in the end, like labor, you and I grew up as fans when labor rarely came up, and you and I, in our professional careers since the late '90s, have lived in a time where labor constantly comes up. Like, correct. Do you remember how weird and disorienting it was when baseball went on strike in the '80s and after the Expos?
Oh, not you mean not the oh 94? Yeah. Oh God, yes. Yes.
In 94. My apologies. 94. But do you remember how disorienting it felt when there was all those that late in the NHL went on strike? And, you know, there was just it felt so disorienting, but now it just feels normal.
Well, there's more information. There's more people covering it, reporting it. So and part of this is people often like the transaction more than the action on the field, on the ice, on the court, whatever. And so that bleeds into it as well, you know. A lot of this is the unintended consequences of having all this information is we have all this information. And, you know, we now know the names of labor lawyers when I just want to know who the starting pitcher is.
Yeah. And, you know, I also think it's just indicative of life these days that people are just more willing to, quote unquote, go there. Mm-hmm. There was all this talk about how, you know, would hockey ever come back? You know, I mean, the Rangers were such a great story and it was so exciting. And then all of a sudden there was labor disruption and will hockey fans ever come back? And I think just over time, everybody sort of knows, yeah, everybody's coming back. Like there are no real consequences to this. You know what I mean? They're just playing with their own money and everybody's sitting on the sidelines waiting for somebody to yell game on. There are no consequences. And this, you see this in politics too. Like Ford can drop the notwithstanding clause, which was supposed to be almost never used, but now you can do it because it's convenient. People would make the same claim about Trudeau and executive action. You know, this should be a last resort. If you use it when it isn't, you normalize it. You know, Trump is broke very few laws and an incredible number of norms. I feel like this labor disruption right now is what happens when you see it a bunch of time and you go, ah, that's just the way these guys are. Instead of, I'm never fucking going back to this game again because they're a bunch of greedy assholes.
Well, to that point, the worst thing that can happen for baseball is less of your last couple words, rage, and more about a lot of what you're saying, apathy. And when Major League Baseball, they ended the 94 season, they didn't really start to come back until it was McGuire versus Sosa. So it took 3 years for it to start to come back. And then you had the Yankees, this dynasty team. So that helped bring more people in than the Red Sox won. If baseball, you know, if they lose a year, A, there's a lot more options now than there was in 1995. More North Americans are into F1, are into soccer than what they were 27 years ago. And B, it's going to take incredible stories. It's going to take five different Shohei Ohtani type stories to eventually get everyone back under the baseball tent. That has to be the big concern for them.
I wish I was obsessed about pitchers and catchers reporting right now. I really do. It's been a tough winter and looking forward to a good Jays season where, God, they look so good to end the year and there's so many exciting dynamic storylines to follow. This was a year where I was really looking forward to some baseball. Now, of course, that was put on the back burner because you assumed this was what was going to happen. But just right now, looking outside my window at the gray sky and the snow on the ground, you know, here we are in the beginning of March thinking, wouldn't it be great just to have, like, I don't even like games in April, you know, alive, but wouldn't you want to go to one just to be at an event?
Oh, yeah. I was at the Raptors' return against the Nets. It was great.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about that. Let's talk about something fun and not disruption. Let's talk, you know, and then we can get into the Leafs and about their big home return.
Oh, by the way, I got to tell, I have a new Leafs stat for you, but we'll discuss in a second.
I saw it, but let's talk about you at the Raptors first.
Yeah. The energy was great. It was a little like, I would still say I went to the season opener. And that one was an all-timer for energy, considering they got killed by Washington. There was definitely the grateful to be back. Hey, isn't this awesome? We're all here again vibe. And that was super cool. It was just a lot of fun. The funniest part was I did not expect that level of booing at Goran Dragic. Like, he got the full Vince Carter treatment. I'm like, he does not deserve this. I was shocked with the dedication among the fans of the ACC.
It's been stored up for a long time.
Yeah.
It might have also been just, you know, like when you skip a meal and when you finally do sit down, you tend to eat just a little quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel. I mean, I was pretty mad at Dragic, but it does feel like there's a lot of layers to it. You know, it could be family stuff. Who knows? We've talked to enough athletes to know, man, some of these people who seem good are really shit. And some of these people who seem like really, like you want to boo for them, that it's way more complicated.
Yeah.
So who really knows? But did you boo?
Oh, God, no. No, I was laughing at it. Like, I thought it was hilarious. And the loudest the crowd was before the final 5 minutes when they came back to beat the Nets was every time Goran missed a shot and the crowd went nuts. But it was, to me, it was just funny. I'm like, oh, wow, I got that dead ass wrong. I expected there to be a little booing off the top, but that was it. So
who was the last person you booed at a live event?
Oh, great question. I don't remember. I'd have to think about it. I don't have a good answer off the top of my head because part of it goes to, it was probably Bob, I don't remember. I don't remember the last time I booed.
It does feel like something after a certain age you probably shouldn't have in your game anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I've sworn, usually the angriest I get, I think, is when the opposing team gets like 3 offensive rebounds in a row. Like something like that is just, or if the Leafs, they have a long 5-on-3 and they don't score, but the Raptors giving up like 3 rebounds in a row to the other team offensively, that's something that will make me angry.
I don't know why, but I have this image of sitting in the press box a long time ago, watching what I call the Vachon Leonard edition of the Raptors. They weren't that strong on the glass, and watching Carlos Boozer in a Cavs uniform just rack up rebound after rebound after rebound. And it's always like, and you've done this before, it's weird when you swear in the press box.
Oh yeah.
Because everybody's trying to like have this almost like doctor-like emergency room dispassion, we're just here for the job. And then those of us who don't know how to do that, like you always stand out. It's so weird. I've heard O-Dog talk about this, like how people have to pretend they're not really cheering inside.
Oh, it's true. You get the stink eye. You get the sports writer stink eye.
What are these guys kidding? I got my first one from Jim Proudfoot a long time ago.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, he looked so angry at us. It was me and Strombo when we were watching the Leafs and the Red Wings, and Detroit scored, and I wasn't happy, and Jim gave me the look like, "What are you guys even doing here?"
Yeah,
which was a good question. It was a fair question. Do you want to talk Raps or Leafs right now? I got.
The Raps, I'm just, my take on the Raps right now is just waiting for OG to come back and Van Vliet. But simple thing here, Dwayne Casey, I'm angry at him. I think he's the worst coach in the NBA. What's his record when a dinosaur isn't involved?
I don't know, but I think he's 9-3 when one is.
Yeah. And he's like a 300 winning percentage the other way. When he was coaching the Raptors, great record. When he's coaching Detroit against anyone, not the Raptors, horrible record. God, that was predictable.
I watched a bit of that game last night, though. They just couldn't hit a bucket. Gary Trent Jr., doing his best John Starks impersonation. It was, it was such a hard game to justify watching. And I watched actually only a little bit of it because then the news broke that like Russia was targeting a nuclear reactor. And I thought, well, I can't really watch basketball right now. I'm a little distracted.
Yes.
Plus, they were almost down 20 at the time I jumped off and got the news. So, it's really weird, that Detroit thing, man. It's like, I guess this could be a segue to Buffalo and Toronto, because some teams, some cities just have your number for some weird reason.
Well, right before we get to the Leafs, just quick, the sponsor for this podcast is our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, and you can go to jeffpollock.com for any sort of legal aid or assistance. And he's been our lawyer for ages, but I talked to Jeff and he just wanted to send out a message to any of the listeners that if you can spare a couple dollars, go to whatever sort of Ukraine relief aid. Obviously he has lots of family and ties and history with that part of the world, and he is hurting inside. I'm sure you must have a lot of people as well, Bob, but Jeff Pollock just wanted me to say to listeners, hey, if you can spare a couple bucks, it's maybe not the way, it's a pretty worthy cause.
So I'll just say this, because it's been hard to watch sports the last week for all the obvious reasons. And I do have family over there. We're not super close. Like, it's not people that I grew up with.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not really, I grew up in a Ukrainian household, but I don't speak it or read it or write it. When I was a kid, I could follow conversations. People would speak to me in Ukrainian. I'd answer in English. But I grew up with my grandparents. They're Ukrainian, both born there and come to Canada. And this week's obviously, like, there isn't even anything really to say about it. It's just there's a maniac who's launched a land war.
Yeah.
But I will say this, how we choose to handle this as Canadians, there are a few things that really should be no-brainers. I think lots of things are up for discussion and sometimes even heated discussion. But, you know, whether or not we should support Putin is not one of them.
No.
So all I'm asking for, and honestly from Canada, is to put down your anger at your fellow person long enough to say, there are things in this world that are still no-brainers, and this is one of them. And let's all act collectively and intelligently.
Absolutely. I loved hearing that, you know, the Canadian government is like, we'll open our doors to as many Ukrainian refugees as possible. That makes sense. One thing people can take a look at, just Google like Ukraine plus Airbnb. My girlfriend Amy found this story last night of people out there renting Airbnb units in the Ukraine because it's a very easy way to get money to them. And then they can use that money directly for food or aid for their common, for their, you know, for the friends, family, neighbors, and things like that. So just Google Ukraine plus Airbnb.
You know, I one thing that, like, there, all the cultures are so different in this world, and we all have our things that make us and not somebody else. And it's really important to honor those things. But I always find when I talk to people whose families also come from another part of the world, how complicated the relationship is with being a North American by birth, mm-hmm. but having a sense of cultural lineage that ties you back somewhere else, especially if you've grown up with people who are from that area. It's just, you don't know. I find, like, is Ukraine my home? No, like it isn't. Like, I'm Canadian and I'm not even going to pretend that that's not the case. But, you know, I just remember my grandparents sitting around the kitchen table listening to their shitty little transistor radio, just trying to get news, you know, and being young during the Cold War and the Soviet Union. Like, it wasn't just as simple as, like, you know, like, there was real politics at play. You know, there was lives that were being shaped by the machinations of powerful people. And maybe that's one reason why now I'm kind of ginned up when it comes to politics, because, you know, you just grew up around it. And, you know, it's one thing to come to America because you want to make dough, and it's another to come because you're running from something. And, you know, my grandparents were certainly, like, broke, having been upended from their respective villages in the war. And, you know, I was at that march the other day, last Sunday, I guess it was, and I couldn't help but think about my grandparents while I was there, you know, about how here I was in this square, still, it's almost like the torch had been handed to me from them saying, like, don't stop fighting. And I don't know how other people feel about that, but it was pretty powerful for me. And yeah, I encourage everybody to sort of get as, Trudeau's going to make mistakes, but right now he's running the government, and how our government behaves is really important. Let's just try to remember that.
100%.
You know, and let's try to bolster the effort and not look for every single thing to attack, because it's really not about us right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we, how do we awkwardly transition from that to the Maple Leafs?
You know, here, I'll do it this way. I actually didn't watch the Buffalo game because I was watching the news.
Yeah.
And smart. Then it quickly became obvious I wasn't going to need to.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, I'm of two minds on this, Maddie. One is, having survived enough disasters as a Leaf fan, you know, like all these collapses against bad teams, and we can get to your stat here, I was pissed off because it's just like, God, can't they just win easy games? But then there's also the, you know, they're fifth overall in points. Like, it's...
Oh, no. Oh, God, yeah. It's funny. I tweeted it out. I mean, both things can be true. The Leafs are a very good team, and it feels like the Leafs lead the league. And wait a minute. You fucking lost that game to them playing like that? What the fuck's wrong with you? Like, I feel like they lead in that category as well.
You had a good stat, or you invented a stat.
Yeah. The David Ayers, the DA, which is for exactly what I said. It's like, I can't believe you lost that game to them like that. And, you know, I threw out my original tweet about, you know, the Leafs are very good, but how could they lose that game? And immediately there's the people that are passionate defenders of the Leafs. That's fantastic. And first someone throws out, well, Tampa, they lost the same score to Buffalo. I'm like, I don't care. The Lightning have earned the benefit of the doubt. The Leafs have not earned any of it. Then someone threw out the Florida Panthers. No playoff success. they also have some embarrassing losses, including like an 8-2 loss to Ottawa. I'm like, okay, that's a fair point. So let's invent a stat. I want to know who leads the league in DAs. And I've got the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs have got 4 DAs right now. And I wonder who would be number one, because I think it'd be Toronto.
That's a great question. And I love calling them DAs because it's almost like a column when you look at the box score.
Yeah.
You know, or you look at the season standings and how many DAs do you have? I love that. I have another name for it. Relative Zamboni driver.
The RCD?
The RCD. Like, how close can you, like, the team that you lost, how close are they to being a team that had a goalie who was a Zamboni driver?
Yeah. And the thing is, this stat, it does not apply. If you're a bad team, you don't get DAs. You've got to be a good team. Right. Like it's funny. I was talking about it on the show, and partially from the betting perspective, this was the largest upset in the regulation this year was the Leafs losing to Buffalo. You know, so that's a classic DA. Like, the Leafs have had a lot of games where they've been a massive favorite that they've lost, like Arizona, Montreal. Remember when they lost 7-1 to Pittsburgh, where Pittsburgh didn't have Crosby, Malkin, or Letang. So you've got to be a really good team, and it's got to be playing against a team that's also playing really bad. And then also, like, if they lost to Buffalo 5-4 back and forth game and, you know, and some fluky goals, then it's not a DA. But you lose 5-1 where you look kind of like you didn't give a shit, that's a DA.
Yeah, I love it, Matt. And I'm going to defend the hysteria a little bit because, and you alluded to this, when you're a team that has shown itself to be mentally, I don't want to call them weak, but they've certainly folded under pressure a bunch of times. Historically, in the last 10 years, we've seen this. They've been in good positions and they've just folded. And when you come off that embarrassing loss in to Montreal in the playoffs, people question your ability to be tough enough to actually win in the playoffs, because it's not just physical. It's a mental game as well. It's a stamina and it's a how much do you want it kind of game. So when the Leafs look like they're listless or they're just handing it back, you think, you know, like, I'll put it to you this way. My daughter wasn't doing much homework, you know, and we talked to the teacher about it and now she is. And great, when she's doing her homework, that's great. But if she slides now, it's like, you should care more because we've talked about this.
You're right. Exactly.
That's kind of how I feel about the Leafs and trying right now. It's like, okay, we said we would give you another chance, but we talked about this. You got no mulligans left. You have to try every night because you've let us down so many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You earn the benefit of the doubt. And by the way, for the people that throw out, what about Florida? They haven't won in the postseason since 96. It's a fair point. But if we go to last year, they played an all-time series against the team that eventually won the Stanley Cup, Tampa. Toronto lost to a team that might get the number one draft pick this year in the NHL.
Well, there's also the point to be made, maybe Florida, you do have question marks because they have to prove it in the playoffs.
Of course. Oh, no, so you do.
It's not like it's one or the other. It's like, well, Florida has problems, so how come you say we do? Well, maybe they both do. Maybe they both have something to prove. And your point about the playoffs is a really good one. I can't blame, obviously, the Bruins losses on this current iteration of the Leafs because they weren't around for it.
Last one, you can. They were up 3-2 in that series with a lot of those same players.
100%. And they probably should have beaten Columbus, although coming off of the break, that long extended break the way they did, that was a really weird series. This team looked amazing against Washington in the playoffs and carved out some wins against a very good team that people thought, oh, geez, these guys are really getting it. And since then, they have been vastly more underwhelming than, I guess, whelming would be the phrase.
That is.
So I think when people are hysterical, it's like there's two things. One, I understand that because they should be on notice. You don't lose against shitty teams. You just don't. The other thing is, the goaltending's been real bad. And that is a real concern. So is Jack Campbell going to bounce back? Well, I'd assume he's going to bounce back to some kind of form. I mean, he's not going to be a 930 save guy probably for his entire life. But, you know, I think and I hope he'll be better than what he is right now. But if those guys aren't good, it doesn't matter. Like, you can go and get a supplemental forward to help your middle six. You can you know, maybe even make a big deal for a defenseman. None of it matters if your goalie stinks in the playoffs. It just doesn't matter. So I think what often happens with losses is part of it is I don't like to lose. And the other one is you grade the kind of loss it was. And exactly. Anybody who's paying attention to those games says, we lost those in exactly the way I hoped we wouldn't. No effort, shitty goaltending.
Yeah, it's funny with the Leafs. You can, if you want, you can argue everything's fine. Look at the points percentage. Look at differential. Or you can go the other side and say everything's wrong because second line, defense, and goaltending. Like you can go either way. Once again, with the Maple Leafs, it's wonderful highs and it's incredible lows. It just, you know what? We talked about this off the top. Maybe I'd be okay with a little bit of boring for a while.
I think for most of the part, like, this has been a great year, you know, for the Leafs as a bounce back year. I mean, now they're playing real competition again. Let's not take that year with the North for anything, because as we now see, most of those teams actually stink. But they're in the hardest division in, geez, certainly in hockey, and it feels kind of like in sport. And they're still fifth in the league in points. Like, they're really good. So this has been that year in a lot of ways. I have felt like I don't need to panic watch them because I think they're good. Better than I thought they would be, actually. A couple of nice stories, like all these additions that Dubas made. Like, the vast majority of them, take Nick Ritchie out of it, but Bunting, Kasha, like, down the line, like, there's been some really good performances from guys he went out and got. None of it matters if the goaltending's not there.
It's true. That's
brutal.
It's the turd in the punch bowl. Like, everything, like the Detroit game was a ton of fun, but that was horrible goaltending. You can't even blame that on the forwards.
Right. And, you know, against Buffalo, like, you know, could they have done a better job of cleaning up stuff? Yeah, but at the same time, like, you know, you want Mrazek to jump in there and give Jack Campbell a jolt, but he hasn't. You know, like, this is kind of the plan B that wasn't a plan B. So plan C is just now hope plan A works out again.
Yeah. God.
You know, and that's really frustrating. You know, I was thinking about this, Maddie, and you know, you're a connoisseur of all sports. So let me throw this out to you.
Yeah.
Is there any position in the major sports in North America that is more important to the success of a team and less understood, with fewer number of people who are actually good at it consistently, than goalie?
There's only one, and you know the answer. It's quarterback.
You're going to say quarterback, but no, but how many good goalies are there where you would say, you know what, in the NHL, which is the best league in the world?
Okay, yeah.
You know what, there's more good quarterbacks than there are good goalies. Like, people you would say, I think you could win a Super Bowl because of that guy.
Well, how about this, Bob? The repeatability of the like, a good quarterback is usually going to be a good quarterback for a bunch of years, barring injury. But Jordan Binnington goes to the highest of highs when St. Louis wins, and then has had some horrible, horrible stretches. Like, you certainly see that more on the, yeah, okay. So the goalie side, how about this? There's much more variance with the goalie position than there is with almost anything else.
And that's kind of like, you know, starting pitching is incredibly important. It's hard to win baseball if you don't have it. But I would, you know.
Philly didn't win when they had Roy Halladay at his prime and a whole bunch of other aces. So, yes, starting pitching is important. But as Tampa Bay has taught us, maybe not as important as you think.
Well, and certainly we're moving further and further away from it. But I just started to think about how many goalies in the NHL right now would you say, if you get that goalie, you're probably going to have a really, really good team to build, like a good player to build around for the next 5 years. It's like almost nobody.
Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, you know, those are, you know, the obvious two.
Gary Price was that guy. Tuukka Rask was that guy. Mm-hmm. But to your point about Binnington, and then it was Braden Holtby or any number of guys where you're like, oh, they're one of the best goalies in the league. 3 years later, oh, they're not that good. Like, yeah. The joy of Corey Crawford with the Chicago Blackhawks was, he may not have been the best, but he was always dependable. He was better than average, and he was always dependable. And that's what I kind of mean by variance. Like, there's a, like, $1 billion industry around finding and coaching up quarterbacks. There's a $1 billion industry around finding and coaching up starting pitchers. Goalie feels like kicker to me.
Oh, yeah.
Where people just sort of give up and say, I hope they're good.
They're never drafted in the first round. You know, it's like, ah, we'll find, we got a couple here. We'll develop. We'll see. It's just, it's really about quantity over quality. Just keep going and hope you find one, and hope whoever that guy is, they get hot in late April to early June.
So here's the thing, Matt, and you brought up the thing about draft, and this is another thing about goaltending that really fascinates me, is if you think you have a really great goaltending prospect, they're not the hottest prospect in the game, despite the incredible impact that they would have on your team if it pans out. You know, there's, you know, big defensemen, there's big, you know, center, like these things always matter, obviously. But when you really think about it, you can have one great center, you know, build a good line around that person, or you can have one really good goalie and build a good team around that person. So why do teams not take bigger chances on guys that they think are going to work out? Like in the NFL, how many guys get chosen because they have the raw material and they think they can coach them up?
Oh, it's all the time.
All the time, right? You just don't get that with goalie. You know, imagine how hard teams would be scouting if they had to pick quarterbacks at 18 years old out of high school. Oof. And you know what I mean? Like, imagine how much money would be poured into how do we discover who's going to be really good at 18 years old, which is more or less what teams have to do with the draft and goalies, right?
Yeah.
How much money would be thrown at it?
I mean, billions.
You know, the funny thing is, like, that, like, the NCAA is exactly where these guys get to find out whether they're going to be good when they get a little bit older, right? Like, there's this multi-billion dollar engine that spits quarterbacks out. Imagine how hard it must be for teams to figure out at 18 who's going to be good.
Well, I mean, because it's a slow period for football, the number one story is this Pickett quarterback who's got really small hands. Boy, I feel bad for this guy. He's like near one of the Heisman finalists, has a great year in college, and now everyone is two sentences away from making dick jokes about him because he's got a small set of hands. What a poor bastard. I feel so bad for him.
So it's Spy Magazine did to Trump back in the day. Small-handed dictator.
Yes. Thankfully, he was so thick-skinned, Trump never brought it up or never bragged about his ability to drink water.
Right. Just like a duck, Matt, just rolled off his back.
My God, he was president. That actually happened.
It's so weird. I know. That should be the name of the 21st century, just the century where that actually happened.
Yeah. We got about 3 minutes or so here.
That's it. Shit, I want to talk to you about the Batman.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. I can't wait.
I was reading about, you know what, like there's been seven different actors that have played the Batman like since the 80s, right?
Yeah.
It made me think about how good Michael Keaton's performance actually stands up. Is he the most underrated actor of our time?
He has to be at the top of that list, 100%. He could do comedy, does serious, was so good in Spotlight, The Founder. Yes, Michael Keaton absolutely gets sort of forgotten.
Like, he's the genius in Night Shift with Henry Winkler, and he's also in Spotlight. Like, who else has had that kind of range and done so many cool things and been Batman?
No one.
I think he's the guy. He might even not just be the most underrated actor. He might be the best actor.
He needs an Oscar, you know. He needs an Oscar.
I don't think he's going to get it as the Vulture.
Probably not. No. I don't like the odds on that one. But, you know,
he's a good Vulture, though.
He's like Dan Marino. If Marino had won a Super Bowl, we would have viewed him differently.
So we got to turn him into Elway.
Yeah.
We got to get him a ring.
Yeah. We got to... Ooh, so then, like, if we're going down this route, then Mike Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, Kyle's dad, you know, he helped get him there. He helped get Elway there.
You ready?
We need a Scorsese.
We need to get him to star in a movie directed by Scorsese and co-starring Terrell Davis.
Yes.
Football joke.
By the way, yeah. What I love about that is just how dated. A, the Keaton reference is dated. And Terrell Davis, it seems like it was just yesterday. That was 23 years ago.
I think I was with you watching that Super Bowl for some reason.
The first Super Bowl where they won, that was 1997. And then they won again in 1998. I started it off the record in 2000.
Okay. So maybe I was with TSN people, but you weren't there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, this has been fun and I missed you. And, you know, Jesus, like, let's just try to, you know, honestly, like, let's survive the week. You know what I mean?
Just, you know, just careful where you're walking, Bob.
What's big on the show today? Let's do a preview of your show.
I've decided to do the Who Really Should Be Booed, not, you know, in honor of Goran Dragic. So I'm putting a list together, like LeBron James, the general manager, Dwayne Casey. So I'm going to come up with a list of the people who actually do, the people in charge of putting the NFL combine on TV. Like, who are the people that really need to be booed?
And I asked, you know what would be a good case study too? Should Zion Williamson be booed?
I mean, right now it feels like he should be, but the moment when CJ McCollum says, yeah, I haven't heard from him, that raises an eyebrow.
You know, but they're a terrible franchise and they've pissed away everything that they've tried to do. And you're a young kid just trying to like go and get your bag and these people are holding you back and you don't want to be there. Like Anthony Davis, remember he wore the That's All Folks t-shirt?
I would push back. Pelicans have played better recently. And listen, they're trying to win. They got CJ McCollum. And you know, we could talk about New Orleans is not exactly the best franchise, but a lot of this has to go onto Zion as well.
So if that team was in Seattle, this shit wouldn't be happening.
Probably not.
You know, so I do think in some ways, I know that if I had to go work for some crappy company and I didn't have a choice to be there and they were pissing away my talent, yeah, I probably wouldn't be happy either.
Kick ass for a couple years. Don't sign the rookie extension. Get all your money and move on.
By the way, I'm not supporting Zion at all. I'm just throwing devil's advocate. He gets from Duke. I hate him.
You know what, Bob? That hit to the head, it certainly didn't erase your hatred of Duke. So that's back in the day when no one cared about concussions and the coach would just look at the football player and go, how many fingers? And the player would say two. All right, get back on the field. The fact that your hatred of Duke is there makes me feel good.
I got one to add to your, and you can even just say my friend Bob. Please don't use my last name. People may know who I am. But to add to your list is honorable mention. I want to get tickets to the final Mike Krzyzewski coached game at a Cameron Indoor Arena so I can boo.
Oh, God, that'd be great.
Can you imagine standing there booing in the middle of that church?
Oh, I love it. Oh, that'd be so good.
Okay, make sure you work that in.
Done.
Done and done.
I steal so much of this for my show anyway. All right. You know, bye, Bob.
Yeah, bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.